It has been some time since I've shared with you from that favorite category, truth is stranger than fiction, that, you know, these might not be true. They are supposedly notes that were recorded on hospital charts. Our medical folks in here can perhaps relate. This one was a note that said the patient refused autopsy. Another one said that patient has left white blood cells at another hospital. That is a bummer. This one's great. Patient recovering from forehead cut became very angry when given an enema by mistake. On the second day, the knee was better, and on the third day, it disappeared. I love this one. The patient has been depressed since she began seeing me in 1993. Two more. These are just priceless. Whether they're true or not, they're wonderful. She stated that she had been constipated for most of her life until she got a divorce. And then this last one. Patient has two teenage children, but no other abnormalities. Oh my goodness. We live in a world of words, language. It communicates. It teaches us, it instructs us, it inspires, it encourages. And sometimes it confuses and amuses us as well. Words communicate. And when it comes to important things, you know, who's going to deny issues of significance, then we want to know the truth. We want words to communicate. We know it's important to have the truth. I like the way that John Ortberg puts it. He says, imagine picking your car up from the shop after a routine tune-up, and the technician says, this car's in great shape. Clearly, you have an automotive genius for taking care of your car. Later that day, your brakes don't work. You find out you were out of brake fluid. You could have died. You go back to the shop and you say, why didn't you tell me? The technician replies, well, I didn't want you to feel bad. Plus, to be honest, I was afraid you might get upset with me. I want this to be a safe place where you feel loved and accepted. You'd be furious. You'd say, I didn't come here for a little fantasy-based ego boost. When it comes to my car, I want the truth. Or imagine going to the doctor. You're there for the checkup. The doctor says to you, you are a magnificent physical specimen. You have the body of an Olympian. You are to be congratulated. Later that day, while climbing the stairs, your heart gives out. And you find out later your arteries were so clogged that you were likely one jelly donut away from the Grim Reaper. You go back to the doctor. Why didn't you tell me? Well, I knew your body, says the doctor, is in worse shape than the Pillsbury Doughboy. But if I tell people stuff like that, they get offended and it's bad for business. They don't come back. I want this to be a safe place where people feel loved and accepted. When it comes to our bodies, we want the truth. Obviously, when something matters to us, we don't want illusory comfort from pain avoidance. We want truth. We want truth. In John 15, we have been journeying together through some teachings of Jesus, words of truth. Words that have to do, quite honestly, with life and with death. How life is to be lived. What it is that is important in life. And in fact, the source of life, the purpose of life. Jesus is making truth statements in this text that we're studying together. And in this study, it seems to me that we're challenged by a couple of things. First challenge is just understanding the language, understanding the words that he uses. It's language of agriculture, vines and branches and fruit. It's a world that was very different from the world in which most of us find ourselves living. But yet, we have enough experience in, you know, tilling the garden and working around, you know, the yard and the flower beds and pruning plants and trees, we get a sense, a connection of what Jesus is talking about here. I think the second challenge, though, is way, way more difficult. It's a challenge of whether or not to believe that Jesus really means what he says when he's using this language. Because if he really means what he says, then it has significant implications for our lives. If the doctor says to you, you are one jelly donut away from death, my suspicion is you won't eat another jelly donut. When the great physician speaks into our lives in this text, is our response just as immediate? When we hear the great physician say, apart from me, you can do nothing, how do we respond? Or when we hear him say, if a person does not remain in me, that person is like a branch that is thrown into the fire and burned. We don't want to believe that, because that is a very threatening truth. Jesus is making some very exclusive, black and white kinds of statements about important things in this text. And that is troubling, I think. I think if we're honest, yeah, there's some trouble stuff here, to say the least. But we need to understand, this is Jesus. He's talking about life. And nobody knows life better than the one who gave it. Nobody knows better how life ought to be lived than the one who created it. He's talking about quality of life. He's talking about life that has been redeemed. And he's talking about redeemed life both for the present and for all of eternity. So, with that in mind, let's stand and read familiar words again to us as we read from John chapter 15, a portion of the entire text that we have read together. Let's read these words together. Let's hear from Jesus again. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. And do we have the remainder? Did it blink out on us, Heather? That's okay. Let me finish that. Don't go away. Stay right where you are. If anyone does not remain in me, that person is like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me, and my words remain in you, says Jesus, ask whatever you wish, and it will be given you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. Brothers and sisters, this is the word of the Lord. Are you sure? Okay then, go ahead and be seated. All right. Turn to someone nearby and ask them this question. How do you know if someone is truly a follower of Jesus? Ooh. How do you know? How do you know if someone's truly a follower of Jesus? Okay, we ready? What do you think? How do you know if a person is truly a follower of Jesus? Of course, you've never wondered that before in your life, have you?
Well, my neighbor to the right says
that. The neighbor to the right, yes, versus the neighbor to the left. Yes. Okay.
This one says it's the bumper stickers on your car. This one here says it's the fruit of the Spirit in your life.
Whoa. Bumper stickers, fruit of the Spirit. Woo. All right. Dottie. Okay.
But I can do what you said about the fruit of the Spirit about my own life.
Okay.
I can look at my own life and see if I'm a true follower to see what fruit am I bearing.
Okay. Okay. Looking for fruit. That's familiar. Did we just read something about that?
No.
Looking for fruit? Brian.
To keep it very simple, how the other person lives.
How the other person lives. Okay.
But it's what their actions are.
Okay. So actions. Talk is... cheap. Actions? Okay, Ellen? Oh, I was hoping somebody might go down that path, and I didn't have to say it.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. All right. All right. Kenny?
Mm. The life situations, it's not a circumstantial happiness, it's a unconditional happiness.
Okay, okay. All right. Anyone else want to add to that? Dixie.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking about words and actions. I agree with Ellen in that if your spirit connects, there's, you know, you've got that underlying whatever it is that spirits connect with.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. If they have phony words and actions, you're going to pick up on them very quickly.
Okay.
Otherwise, words and actions, I think, are important.
Okay. Words and actions are important. Jill?
Well, I have a controversy about that because my very own atheists that we hang around with a lot are full of integrity.
Mm-hmm.
They do lots of loving, great things. They have attitudes that would reflect some...
Mm-hmm.
Yes, a lot of character, and people would say those people are full of good stuff.
Okay, okay.
So my response to that is that those people are made in God's image and are reflecting that.
Yes, yes, yeah. Theologians would call that common grace. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mike?
I think there's a part of this that's called pruning, and so when we get pruned, what kind of fruit, how do we respond to that?
Okay. Yeah, how do we respond? And in fact, perhaps how do we understand that process? We could go on and on and on. That is a loaded question, isn't it? And it's an important question to us because we understand that not only is eternity at stake in understanding and clearly defining who a follower of Jesus is, but we also want to know for ourselves, you know, who, when I'm hanging out with somebody, where are they at? Where do they stand? Here's a question for you. Have you ever asked yourself, how do people know that I am truly a follower of Jesus Christ? I think, and maybe it's just me, I think we're inclined to ask that question about others, and we forget to turn the question this direction. And I believe that that's where Jesus is going here in this text. You know, this is a text for self-examination. Remember, in John's gospel, Jesus is coming to the end of his life. He is going to the cross soon. He's going to be gone. He's concerned that these followers of his carry out the mission to which they have been called, which I will say is his mission. The mission of Jesus. And what have we talked about as we have launched into this study together, and I hope have repeated it often? What was the mission / passion of Jesus? Now, we're thinking to ourselves, the mission of Jesus was to come into the world and to die on the cross. I think that's what accomplished the mission. That was the means to the mission. What was his mission? What was his passion? To glorify his Father. Tell me again, what have we said? To glorify God means to do what? Simply put, it means, do you remember? To do his will, to put God in his proper place. To not live compartmentalized lives. God belongs here, but he didn't belong here. Can you imagine? Coming before the King of the universe and saying, I did my best, God, but there were just places where you didn't belong. Really? That's a compartmentalized life. And the passion of Jesus was to make his Father known to everyone that he met. Because in the mind of Jesus, and who's going to know better than the one that's been hanging with the Father for eternity, that this is a God who is worth knowing by everyone in every place, no matter their circumstances, no matter the setting. The passion that Jesus had, the mission of Jesus, was to make his Father known to people who needed to know the Father. And his death on the cross made that ultimately possible. To see Jesus is to see a God like no other. To believe in Jesus, to have faith in his death and resurrection, his taking my sins upon himself, is to find myself in a place where I can have a relationship with this God. And in fact, it's to be restored to a relationship for which we were created. Does this sound familiar?
Yeah.
So important. It's so important that we keep this in mind, because when we come to these words of Jesus, we need to understand what it is that he's talking about. The thing we need to hear in these words from Jesus is that from those whose lives really belong to him, those who are rooted in the vine, what have we said? The branch gets its life from the vine. And what's going to be evident in the branch is the life of the vine. What's the life of the vine? Jesus. Passion for God's glory. For God to be made known. When Jesus talks about fruit, that's the fruit. Because passion for God's glory will drive us to live our lives like Jesus. Any kind of fruit? Not at all. Will anything do? No. This is an exclusive truth statement. And we need to be clear. We need to understand what kind of fruit Jesus is talking about. Fruit that is consistent with the life that is flowing into the branch that produces the fruit. If Jesus is the vine, and we are the branches, and we are connected to that vine, guess what? Jesus' life is flowing into us. And the greatest passion of his life was to make God known to lost people. Charisse and I were in Grand Junction this early in the week. We were there on Monday and Tuesday, and as those of you know who've been there, it was our first time there, that entire valley is just covered with peach trees and grapevines. They're everywhere. It's this amazing, beautiful contrast of these giant desert-looking monolithic, you know, crags and rocks and ledges, and at the base stands this lush green orchard, this lush green vineyard. It's just the juxtaposition of the two is remarkable. From a distance, you think to yourself, oh, that's an orchard. From a distance, you think, oh, that's a vineyard. But as you come closer, you realize, oh, that's a peach orchard. Oh, that's a grape vineyard. And then when you get even closer and you look at the trees, guess what you find on them? Apples! Peaches. They're peach trees. You get close to the grapevines, guess what you find? Blackberries! Grapes. They're grapevines. That's the point. There is no other option for us in this passage. None. If we are branches that are connected to the vine of Jesus Christ, then his life is flowing into us. And when his life flows into us, it comes out as passion to make God known. That becomes the supreme motivation of our lives. It is so much more than the stuff that we want to make Christianity out to be. A true Christian is someone who goes to church all the time. A true Christian is someone that has a faithful quiet time. A true Christian is someone who prays marvelous prayers. A true Christian is someone who does good deeds. No! A true follower of Jesus is someone who turns their cell phone off in church. I'm sorry, that was so mean, and I'm only teasing. A true Christian is someone who has the life of Jesus in them. And Jesus spilled out passion to make his Father known to a lost world.
Amen.
Holy cow. That's what this text is about. Let's look at two of Jesus' what I call black and white statements that I think radically underscore the importance of what he's saying here. And let me just ask some questions as we go through it, maybe just a little bit more interactive than we would normally be at this point. First statement, we read in verse 5, Jesus says, I am the vine, you are the branches. If a person remains in me and I in them, they will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Okay, tell me again, who's the vine? That was pretty enthusiastic. Who's the vine?
Jesus.
Good. Who are the branches?
We are.
His followers, his people. The branches are connected to what?
The vine.
Who's the vine?
Jesus.
Okay, good. You got it. Okay, so tell me about the branch. Where does it get its life from?
The vine.
Are you sure?
The vine.
Do you think there could be life somewhere else? Did you say, of course?
Mars.
Oh, Mars. Okay.
Is that the right answer?
It was close, Lee. It was really close. Bless your heart for trying. Okay. Jesus is the vine. We're the branches. The branches are connected to the vine. That's where our life is. And so when the branches produce fruit, they're yielding, as we've said, the passion and the life of Jesus. But what's interesting to me here is that Jesus says, you'll bear much fruit. Jesus is speaking here about a relationship of intimacy. To the word remain, the original language is the idea of it's where we make our home. It's where we settle in. It's where we put down roots. It's the idea that's conveyed in some of the other translations when they talk about abiding, staying put, finding a place, finding life, finding vitality, and living there, spending your time there. So if I'm living in Jesus, if I'm spending my time with Jesus, if I am rooted in Jesus, which he, and he's living in me, which is his promise through his Spirit, what happens? The branch bears much fruit. Now, what we immediately want to do is we want to understand, you know, how much time is involved with that much thing, you know? Does that mean that I bear much fruit on day one, or is it like a year into my life with Jesus? Don't even go there. It misses the big picture when we ask those kinds of silly questions. The point that Jesus is making is that intimate relationship with Jesus produces fruit, much fruit. And the fruit is a passion for God's glory to make him known to people who do not know him. Jesus was passionate about that. He was passionate for his Father. And he was obviously, when we look at his life in the Gospels, he was passionate for people who didn't know his Father. It's that life that will flow into us. If we really understand what Jesus is saying here, then some of those questions that we so often ask about others will begin to pale in comparison to the importance of this one. Why? It's a question for us. It's a question for me. It's a question for you. If you're interested, can I give you an assignment? This is frightening, If you're interested in knowing whether or not you're living a vital, fruit-producing life for Jesus, fruit being passion for God, to make him known, to make him the center of everything that you do, your thoughts, your words, your actions, every movement, that's the kind of fruit Jesus is talking about. If you want to know if that's a part of your life, ask someone who knows you really well. Not the person who's been standing off at a distance looking at the orchard or the vineyard, but the person who's right here and sees the branches clearly. How am I doing? Ask someone who knows you well. Be bold enough to ask them, from what you know of my life, what's my greatest passion? If they answer anything but passion for God and to make him known in your life, you got work to do. We all do. Passion for God. If they say, I see in you a passion for God to make him known through your life, and I see that flowing out of your words and your actions, but those in and of themselves, those don't really impress me. It's the passion that motivates all of that. That's when you get to go, yes! Thank you, Jesus, for the intimacy, for the relationship, for the Spirit of God that is indwelling me. Oh, don't let it stop. Give me more. Anything else needs work. There's a clue for us. Remember the words of Jesus in Matthew chapter 7? Obedience has a lot to do with this whole thing. A good tree, Jesus said, cannot bear bad fruit. That worries us. Because I like to think of myself as a good tree. I have bad fruit in my life. I got fruit that's rotten sometimes. It stinks. It's not even worth looking at, let alone eating or sampling. That troubles us. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit. A bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, Jesus said, by their fruit you will recognize them. Not everyone who says to me, on that day, Lord, Lord, will enter into the kingdom of heaven, but only those who do the will of my Father who is in heaven. How do we know what the will of the Father is in heaven? We know it by looking at the Son who came to reveal the Father, who moved and breathed every moment of every day in his relationship with the Father. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and in your name drive out demons and in your name perform many miracles and do all kinds of good things? That's my commentary. Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evil doers. That leads, I think, to the second truth statement that I want us to hear, and it's another troubling one. Verse 6, if anyone, Jesus says, does not remain in me, she is like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. It's a powerful statement. I don't want to be a bad branch I don't want to be a branch that is withered and thrown away, put into the fire. In April of 2010, the Associated Press reported that Alfred and Jerry Esposito of New York were told by their police that their son, Freddie, had been killed in a collision with a tractor trailer on a Pennsylvania highway. It was a tragic mistake on the authorities' part, though it was understandable because for some reason the man who died was carrying Freddie's driver's license. So Freddie was supposed to be staying with his brother Chris. So when Chris got word of his brother's death, he went racing home. Jerry, his mom, relates the story. He went running downstairs into his brother's apartment. He saw something on the couch. He started poking at the lump in the blankets, and his brother Chris woke up. Freddie woke up, and Chris screamed, "You're dead! You're dead!" To which Freddie counters, "No, I'm sleeping!" If you sit here this morning, my friends, and there is something at work in your heart that says, "Oh, I want to be a fruitful vine. I want to be counted in those that are producing much fruit." Then that, I think, is the first step towards living into a life of fruitfulness that brings God great glory. And that's where we're going to go in these next 2 or 3 weeks, to talk about the remaining, to talk about cultivating that relationship, to talk about becoming just overtaken with awe and wonder at the amazing grace and goodness of God in our lives. Praise team, why don't you come on up and prepare to lead us as we respond in just a few minutes. We started this morning, if you recall, with the importance of language, of words and their meanings. Let me say that as significant and important as this text is, there's a limitation, I think, in its application. The vine, of course, Jesus is perfect. The branches, his people are not. You know, does a real vine, you know, do any of those grapevines that are branches that I saw in Grand Junction, do they really have a choice? Well, they don't. But we understand that as people, we make choices. You know, and perhaps this text is an important wake-up call. We're not dead yet. Maybe we're just sleeping. And maybe it's time for us to look more closely within and say, what is the passion of my life? What is driving me? At what point am I dead and no longer fruitful? Don't go there. Start at the beginning. Start with what Jesus says. To remain in him, to live in him, to abide, to stay with, to settle into Jesus, to live life intimately with him, is to bear much fruit. And that is a blessed life. Too often, for me, and I think for many of us, there's a question about his followers. You know, what are they about? Where are they at? What's driving them? I think Jesus' point for us this morning is to turn those questions upon ourselves and ask, what is my greatest passion? If the person closest to me in my life cannot answer that question with the statement, it is a passion for God, it is a love for God that drives everything that you do, then my brothers and sisters, we got work to do, and we're not dead yet, so let's get busy.
Amen.
Amen.